this, the facilities here a place to gather, and good place to meet. Unfortunately, they've had a little bit of a problem with water leakage getting into electrical, and we've lost the sound system and audio video stuff, so we're kind of implementing the best we can. If you can't hear, just raise. We'll try to make sure we're speaking properly and try to speak to the audience. We'll try to make sure you understand what we're going to talk about. But the agenda today that we're going to go through, we're going to talk just a little bit about the previous meetings. We're going to talk about the public comments we had. We had a public comment period. We received comments that came in. We want to talk to you about those and how we've thought about those. We're going to look at changes to the draft plan that we made based on those comments. And then we're going to talk about the web page and water rights listing that we're going to have the information available so that you can actually go to the site and see water rights and look at references there to see the listings of the water rights. And then we're going to talk about the next steps, about where we're going to go. We do have a copy of the draft plan that will be available today for you to have. Hopefully we've got enough copies. If not, the city said they actually, the copy machine's still working. Yeah, so they said they
wasn't
make
the
some more copies. So thanks, Laura. Appreciate that very much. Anyway, as far as the agenda we're going to be going through, Teresa's going to be talking about the first three areas, previous meetings, the public comments, and the changes to the draft plan, right? We'll talk through that. Teresa is our regional engineer responsible for the Utah Lake and Jordan River area. Appreciate the work that she does and her involvement in the development of this plan. The web page and water rights listing, Jim Reese is going to be talking about that, and then next steps, I'll come back up and we'll just kind of talk about where we're going from here. So, oh, yeah, we have a sign-up sheet here that is in the back. Let's pass that around and get your name on it and contact the information. Boyd is asking for what information on there. Is it?
Name and address.
Just name and address. And then things that we try to communicate with you, we will use this list to help communicate for future correspondence, too. So get your name on there and make sure you get signed up. So we'll turn the time over to Teresa.
Okay. So we wanted to just cover just a little bit. I think there's some new faces here today that we haven't seen in some of the previous meetings. So we just wanted to cover what got us to this point with the public process that we go through. So we started with some policies, groundwater policies, that were implemented in 95 for the Northern Utah Valley and Cedar Valley areas. Since that time, different studies have been done and different information has come to light, and that's what we've incorporated now into this draft plan that we have. So as we were starting to go through that, and we've got a couple of different groups here. So in 2004, we actually had a public meeting out in Cedar Valley, so I'm kind of talking more Cedar Valley right now, where the UGS had just finished a study looking at what are the water resources in that area. And so we implemented some different amendments to the 95 plan that we then started regulating in 2004. So as we've started now developing, we've realized some of the new information that has come along kind of affects that policy that we put into place in 2004. Recently, in 2009, we actually then started looking at Northern Utah Valley, and we sent out a notice, and the date of that notice is September 30th, 2010. And it's kind of an important date for those of you in the Northern Utah Valley area, because with that notice, it did say that we would hold any applications, any new application or applications that propose new withdrawals to groundwater. So that date does become part of this new draft policy, and we're talking the Northern Utah Valley areas, which would be kind of just west of the river, east of the river, and on down through Provo. So that does kind of become a key date to keep in mind as we talk about the policy. And then in 2013, we had another meeting over in Highland. Several of you were there, and we actually issued the draft plan that several of you have commented on. And that we also presented data from the USGS study. So we've got a couple different, Cedar Valley was the 2013. And then later in 2013, we handed out the draft plan. So there's two different slides there. That draft plan was dated July 9th is when we had that meeting that we handed that out. And we opened it up for that 30-day comment period. And I'm going to talk about just a couple areas here, because as I talk through some of these comments that we received in the draft plan, I'll use these terms, and I just want to make sure that everybody is on the same terms that we are. So when we talk Northern Utah Valley, the 55 area, it's this area within here. When we talk 54 East, it's this area right in here, and then 54 West is this area right in here. And just to kind of explain, so in 95, the Cedar Valley policy for 95 encompassed that entire 54 area drainage, and it's one hydrologic basin. And then in the 55, it actually included this portion on down the southern and then Goshen. This amended draft does not affect any of these areas down here. We're only focused up in this boundary area. So when I refer to Area 55 is in regard to this plan, it's this northern part. And then 54 East and 54 West, and those are going to kind of be some key points there. So from those public comments, we received six comments that had come in from these entities up here. You can find the complete comments on our website as well if you want to take a look at those. And what I'm doing here just briefly is covering some of just the highlighted comments that had come in. So one of the concerns that came in was that when the 2004, the 95, and then the 2004 amendment to the Cedar Valley Plan came in, it was understood that the three municipalities in Cedar Valley, Cedar Fort, Fairfield, and Eagle Mountain, would equally share an allocated amount for that area. They also commented that no entity should monopolize the water, and that any additional water that's in that area should be divided three ways between those entities. And, you know, I mean, water rights are of record. They've already had the filings, and they are in place. And so we can't just divide them to particular entities. So another comment that came in is that there was agreement that the groundwater in Northern Utah Valley does contribute to Utah Lake, which it does. That prior rights should not be impaired, which statute covers that. And there was support for the proposed restriction to not allow, continue to allow surface waters to move to groundwater. And we'll talk a little bit of detail of that. There was also support for the policy to protect prior rights, require reporting of those withdrawals, and also encourage aquifer storage projects for the future. So those comments had come in, which the plan does do that. Some comments came in that water users should not have the ability to move rights from one side of Utah or Jordan River to the other side of the Jordan River because of lesser quantity. And no rights should be allowed to transfer between that 54 area and the 55 area where that administrative boundary was somewhat in alignment with the Jordan River. And that they wanted a list. What are these water rights that we've been looking at that we came up with these numbers? So we've answered that question too. And it's, it, you know, when you look at these two the models that had been done, there are two separate hydrologic systems that do discharge around the river, along the Jordan River. And, you know, is that, can you say there is a line down that? No, it's a fairly, you know, kind of depending on the season, where is that line? And it's more of a wider line along that river area. And so with the plan that we had proposed, we are trying to give some flexibility with users that are within there. And I know it's a little hard to look at the groundwater systems and see how those actually commingle. And when you look at rivers, you know, we can see those. And even over time, you know, sometimes rivers adjust and change and their course changes. And by allowing that flexibility to move rights, you know, a landowner may, the river may change, and now all of a sudden he's got part of his farm on the other side of the river. And by having that central zone in this policy, they can still serve, you know, both sides of that river. And even when you look at groundwater with wells, you know, if you're on standing on one side of that river pumping, and you move to that other side of that river and pump, you know, you may not see a direct effect on either one of those systems, depending when you're in that discharge area. So that's where we were trying to allow some flexibility with that central area. This is another comment that came in, and it's basically how would we address priority? Kind of how does the management, how would we manage that system or those water rights so that we ensure safe yield isn't exceeded? With the new plan, this draft that we'll hand out today, we did add a paragraph in there that talks about priority withdrawals and how those are regulated. And some of the points, and I want to make sure that, because this is actually a very good question, especially for this system. And I think that it makes the system a little more complex. So what the person who actually commented on or provided this question, so it, you have the Utah Lake, which provides rights, senior rights, down the Jordan River to Salt Lake Valley. Those have very old priority dates, 1850, 1870s. They're very old in priority. Now, a lot of those rights have moved up into this area into groundwater through change applications, which those change applications also have a priority date. And what the person, what you know, you kind of need to be aware of is what is the priority date that regulates if there's a localized interference in groundwater. And that's what this policy is getting at, is that the priority date that would regulate a localized area is when that first moved into that system. Now, if there's a basin-wide, that does become more conjunctive management between those systems, but hopefully the users that are in this area would, you know, voluntarily kind of make that still continue to happen. So it is just a question that I just wanted to make sure that most people understood that this could have some implications, and we did try to address that in the plan. It was a good comment that was submitted. There was also some concern about rescinding this 2004 policy, which was the modification to the 94. We've clarified that. We maybe should use the word rescind. This new plan that we're proposing amends those prior, all of the prior groundwater, nothing's being rescinded. This is just amending and superseding those policies. So we wanted to clarify that. Let's see. No paper rights outside of the 54 West, which is more that Cedar Valley proper. No paper water rights outside of that should be allowed to move into that 54 West was one of the comments as well. And we think that this does address that to some extent, and it should comply with statutory criteria to not allow impairment with existing rights. Again, another comment was, what water rights are you guys talking about? Where's this listing that we can see? And we have a web tool that Jim will show you guys where you can actually see the water rights that we're looking at as we come up with these numbers. There was support, a comment in support to manage the 54 area, east and west, as one hydrologic system, which it is. And then transfers from areas, someone commented that transfers from the east to the west should only be limited to municipalities, and that's not. So those were just kind of a summary, a brief summary of those comments. And like I said, you can get complete comments on our website if you want to read through those. These aren't the top comments or the highest comments. We just tried to summarize all of them into some of the, just to highlight some of the points for those comments as we went into this new policy. So what you're going to see as far as changes to this draft we'll hand out today, there is a paragraph on that priority regulation which helps to understand or give the position of what will happen if priority regulation needs to occur. It does, we still feel very strongly that allowing some flexibility around that river where those two systems are discharging, we still feel that, we want to give water users that flexibility to be able to do that. We did, previously we thought is 2 miles, you know, a good buffer. As we came back, we started looking at it, looking at some existing rights in that area, and we've actually narrowed that to 1 mile within that river. And when we look at water rights that are in that 1 mile buffer, a lot of them straddle that river already. There are some private individuals that are dedicated to that west side of the river, and some private individuals that are dedicated to that east side. Others kind of straddle in that area. So providing that buffer does help. Plus, I think if you keep in mind, as far as transfers into the 54 area, this policy still restricts, and I'm talking to more of the Cedar Valley type folks, it does restrict rights from other parts of the 55 area moving into the Cedar Valley. That still is not going to happen. You know, the 54 area is what the 54 area is at this point. There will be no additional rights moved in. Now, will the 54 east and 54 west commingle? Probably. There will be some, you know, kind of movement and commingling there, but it's one hydrologic system. Once they develop those two models, there's definitely a connection between those two areas. So it just doesn't seem separating them or keeping them separate any longer is really the best way to go. So so we did keep that central zone in there, but you'll see it's 1 mile at this point. And then we did rewrite a little bit of that language to clarify. We're not rescinding previous policies, we're amending them. Pretty much most of the rest of that draft policy is what you guys have already seen with just these few modifications. The other thing that a lot of people requested, and there's just a little map on that 54 East, and it shows kind of that buffer zone through there for that flexibility in that discharge area for those two systems. So one of the tools, and this is where I'm going to turn it over to Jim. This has kind of been his work. We actually developed some lists for you guys to use. We talked about it prior to the meeting to make sure we're talking about the same water rights and what values do we have, what water rights are involved. So Jim has created this listing that we'll show you. It'll be available on our website so anybody can use it, and he'll show you how it works. The one thing that I was going to mention on here is you're going to see priority date right here. When I talked about priority in the groundwater system, the one thing you want to be careful of is this priority date that's going to display here will be the latest change application on a water right. So, for example, let's say someone moved a water right from Utah Lake into a well in the groundwater, and then that with the change application, it had a priority date. Then they moved that well 1,000 feet away, and it has a new priority date for that change. The priority date that you really want to make sure that you're understanding is when it first moved into that groundwater, because that would be the regulating priority. So this will show the latest. And like we always say with water rights, you know, we do the best we can from our database. We skim that data to try and give you a list. But always go to the files and make sure you know the data that you're looking at. And it does take some research. I know a lot of times I get handed a printout from our database and they say, what can I do with this? Well, let me look at the file and I can tell you. So just make sure you're understanding that priority date for your water rights. And I think I'll turn it over to Jim at this point. Do you need that?
So what I just wanted to show today was some of the resources we have available on our website regarding this groundwater management plan. And tomorrow we'll have a link directly on our homepage to the page for this groundwater management plan. But you can always get to it by going to data here at the top and groundwater, and then follow this link, groundwater management plans. And here are all the groundwater management plans we have in the state. And if you go down under the headings of Cedar Valley and also under Northern Utah Valley, there's a link that takes you to the same place. So we have this page specifically for this groundwater management plan. This link at the top has a PDF copy of the plan. And then we have three different maps that you can look at to see where the different boundaries, like the area 54 East, 54 West, where those exactly, so you can pinpoint where those are. And then we have also down below links to the different reports that have been used in the development of the plan, links to our past public meetings and each one of those, the information that was shared at those meetings. And then also we have at the bottom the public comments that have been shared so far. And so the couple of tools I'm going to mention. So we have the water rights listing that Teresa talked about a little bit. And so that there's a link to that here. And then we have a change application evaluation tool that we're going to be developing here pretty quick that would allow you to, with a map interface, put in a point, click a point, and it will tell you where a water right exists, a point of diversion existing at that point may be changed to or may be considered for a change under the policy, or you can click a point and have the map generate an area that says, okay, this area is where a water right could be changed from to the point that you've clicked on. And then the last part of that would also be that you could enter your water right number, and it would know that as of now, what are the points of diversion associated with that water right number at this point in time, and be able to tell you where that water right could be changed to. Okay. And then the other one that we already have is the listing tool. And what you can do with this, you can select here which area of the groundwater management plan you want to look at. You can look at the whole plan area or just a small part. We talked about that central zone or around the boundary between areas 54 and 55. So you could select those just to see which water rights are in those particular areas. And then also it's just gives you the option for sorting by different fields, different columns. Okay? Any questions on that? Okay.
Okay, so we'll try to develop some good tools for you to be able to use and access the information. If you can see improvements that you'd like to have us make, let us know. We can work on those things to make them even better. But we try to make our data just as accessible as we possibly can. So,
hey, I got a question on that last slide. I'm sorry that we've already gone ahead, but what does depletion mean?
Depletion is the amount of water that's actually lost from the hydrologic system based on the use of your water. So saying irrigation, right, the duty here in Utah County is 4 acre feet per acre is what they figure that we need to kind of irrigate the crop. But that assumes about a 50% efficiency. The crop consumptive use factors are just a little bit over 2, so it's about 50% of that water
that's allowed under your water right to be used for the crop is actually used by the crop and lost to the system. The rest of it then would return in either through deep groundwater percolation or runoff and return through surface streams or something. So that stays in the hydrologic system. But depletion is the water that's actually lost. Okay. Did everybody get a chance to sign the sign-up things? I guess, Boyd, you're helping get those around. Make sure you get your names on that if you'd like to be contacted, because we are going to be sending some things out, and you want to know what's happening. I guess make sure your name's on there. As far as the next steps that we're going to be going through, we do have the revised policy that will be available for you today. That you're welcome to pick up a copy, and let's just make sure everybody gets one if you'd like to have one. We'll have one here, and it's also available on the website. You have them here? We can pass them around even if you want to do that. And then I'm going to give you 4 minutes to read it and then comment real quickly. No. Statutorily, to establish a groundwater management plan in the state of Utah, we have directions about how we have to go through this. And the process is to have the public meetings that we've had in the past. We've complied with the requirements to have meetings, proper notice times, and calling people together and doing publications and issuing the plan. Now, our next step then would be to, and we're actually going to do this probably sometime next week, is send a notice out that after reviewing all of the comments and information that we've got on gathered together, we're going to issue a statement that within 60 days we are going to adopt this plan. Okay, and we have to give a 60-day notice. So you're going to have a 60-day notice period to comment to us. If we have significant information come in that is contrary to anything that we're doing in the plan, that think we need to change it, we may alter that and then not adopt that plan. But short of that, we're going to go ahead and have this plan adopted. Then after that point, if the plan needs to be changed, we have to go through this public process again to change the plan. And we're willing to do that as things arise and as problems arise in the area, or we see different things develop in the groundwater basin. We may call people back together again and address those specific things and make modifications as we need to make them in the future. But we'll be sending this notice out, and we're required by statute to send that out to specific entities and to specific water groups. I'm guessing we'll send that out to people here signed up on this list, and we'll just try to get that word out as best we can. I can't remember if it requires publication. I think it does, actually. We have to have a publication on this. So that will happen next week, and so you're going to have 60 days from that time frame to comment additionally to us, if you would like to, if you have comments. Again, if we feel like they're significant, we'll deal with them the best we can. If we feel like we've addressed them in the things that we've already looked at, we will go ahead and implement the plan at the end of that 60 days. Now, after that time, you still have remedies. If you're not comfortable with the plan, it says that you have the options to go through a process, and you can actually appeal the state engineer's decision to adopt that plan. And so there's a legal process in Section 73.5.15 that you can look at, and there's some specific steps for you to go through to actually appeal this groundwater management plan. So you've got some options even after we adopt this. So so next week the mailing will go out, and then the 60-day period will start. Part of this plan is going to be the adoption of a water use reporting requirement. And I believe the level set on that is a 100 acre feet of water. So if your water right entitles you to pump 100 acre feet of water from the groundwater aquifer, you're going to be required to report that through the water use program to the state engineer's office, so we can keep tabulations on where water is being withdrawn from the aquifer in those larger amounts. We keep a tabulation of that, and that tabulation actually will be available for people to look at and see how much water is being taken in different areas of the basin. But we feel that's very important to kind of help monitor what's happening through here for our own good, and then for everybody else to be able to see and watch what's happening. So I think that's it, right?
this meeting being specifically set up for the groundwater management plan. If you have any questions about that plan, we're happy to talk about that. If you have specific questions about your water rights, several of us were going to stay after the meeting, and you're certainly welcome to come and talk to us about specific things that you may have questions about. But if you have any questions about the plan, and I know you just have been given it, but there aren't a lot of significant changes right now from what we actually have passed out in the past. But you do have comments. If you want to talk to us about anything, too, feel free to call us and ask questions, too. We'll certainly respond the best we can.
Chad, I just have a question here. I'm looking at the sheet you just handed out. And like on your recharge potential and actual use areas, everything here is on 54. There's nothing on 55. I can see.
Where am I looking here?
So turn to page six. Table 4.
Okay, right below.
Right, well, you got it?
It looked like it was all just one thing there, and it said 54 at the top.
We try to use confusing gray skills. I'm sure he can't pick it up. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
What credit, when you say use, I guess is there any distinction between what is completed and what is returned through irrigating, you know, obviously when you irrigate or water your lawn, a lot of that return is recharged. Is that included, or is that, you know, you have these tables on page 6 about use versus recharge. You know, I guess when you say recharge, does that include what recharges because water that is pulled out of the ground and then recharge through your irrigation practices?
No, so the recharge would be recharge to the basin from precipitation that the models had the groundwater models had found. So it's actual what is the typical recharge into that basin. So I think you're thinking more of a use once you've diverted the water, and then there's a certain return component,
right,
and a depleted. This is more to determine safe yield of the basin, that term recharge.
So when you say recharge, does not consider once you pull it out of a well, does it consider any of that going back into the ground?
So the actual use, and we would look at that on an individual right basis, but the actual use that you see in that table is the amount that can be diverted under your water right. It doesn't look at depletion rates of those water rights as well.
That.
But we do consider return flows based on your usage, okay? The water that you're pulling out of, say, well, you're pulling that out and you're going to irrigate with it. Again, there's a component of the amount of water that you pull out, the inefficiency of the system that you're using, and the return flow components that would be there. We actually try to address this in our change application processes where people are taking irrigation rights and say, going to municipal type rights. And we'll look at that and say, historically, here's what you've done. You've pulled so much water out of the ground, or you've had the right to do that, to irrigate with, and you've had the right to deplete a certain amount, which meant quite a bit of the water would have been returning to the aquifer, to the stream system or surface sources. If you're going to change uses, you have to keep that in balance. If not, somebody's going to get hurt. And so as you move it to another use, what you divert and what you deplete then on your actual use needs to stay the same from what it was before the change compared to after the change, and so that everything stays in balance. So we will do those evaluations based on your diversion and depletion, and require that recharge, you leave it there and don't divert it, or that there is return flow that actually gets back into the system.
I guess just to clarify on table 4, when you have those negative numbers, it doesn't mean that that we're taking out of the system that negative number, because that negative number assumes zero return flows. So that's, I guess you want to understand what that means.
So what the negative numbers are comparing, so like if you were to look at that 54 area, the total recharge to that system is 26,000. The potential withdrawals of water based on the water rights that are in that system are 39,500. So, yes, if everybody was to pump the full extent of their water rights, it would exceed that recharge, the amount available.
We know a certain portion of that 39,500 is being returned.
Sure. Good. Yeah.
I'm not necessarily with my
And what we're going to be watching are groundwater levels. And we're going to see what's happening to them. And as long as they're staying fairly stable, you know, we'll keep moving along. But when we get to the point where we're starting to see significant groundwater declines in a basin, then we're going to come back. And the only way that we have to regulate that kind of thing is based on priority. Unless there's some type of a voluntary agreement between users in the basin, and we would then come back in, and I'm sure we'll pull people back together again and just say, hey, we've got a problem here. We've got some declines happening. We need to get that stabilized. And we're going to have to come back then and start regulating based on priority of the right. So,
on your groundwater recharge, what you say go back in, how are you monitoring that? Because we have very little groundwater left that you can find in the area.
Well, and the groundwater recharge then is just going to be through the monitor well system that the USGS is using. Now, they monitor
the flows of the wells in the winter.
They take measurements of the groundwater levels and what's happening. We get measurements every year to show where things are and what's happening and whether they're coming up or going down.
What I'm saying is you lose flow in the summer. You get flow back in November, December.
Right.
But now some of them aren't even reflowing again. So where are they measuring, where are they determining how much of it's actually going back into the aquifers?
So I think, and maybe it's kind of, as Kent talks about, when you have the questions on the recharge that's being described in this policy, there's, going back, and if you were to read this policy, I don't know if, like the gentleman behind you had seen the first draft of the policy, but really the recharge that we're talking about there is what the modeling shows recharges that aquifer. The actual depletion of those water rights that Ken is describing is when we look at change applications, somebody may be using, and there is a return flow component of that, but the measuring that we're talking about will help monitor that use so that if we start getting up toward these numbers that the water rights would allow, what impacts are we having and what do we need to adjust to do? And so that's kind of, so I think there's a little bit of confusion with recharge and return flow that's kind of happening with this. So if you still have questions, definitely call me and we can talk about it.
All right.
So.
Question here.
You guys have probably answered this question, and I missed it. But page 6 in the same area, we're really talking about the recharge that's over-appropriated in 54. The potential use is over-appropriated in 54 now. So I guess it's kind of an overall question. Why are we even considering moving the cap off of that area if it's currently over-appropriated now? Why would we even change that 1995 decision?
Okay, and we are not taking that cap off. What we're just saying is we're identifying that there is a cap there and that has to remain. Okay, we are not going to approve any more in. We had a meeting, what was it, in 2010? When we actually said, we're starting this policy meeting here, and anything filed after that, we're not moving any more groundwater in, because we were still had the policy where we would take surface waters and allow them to go to the groundwater system. Mm-hmm. But we're saying we're not going to do that anymore because we're over-allocated. And we are over-allocated, and this policy has just said that we're not going to move any more surface waters into the ground. We're not going to allow that. But if you're already in the ground, we are going to let you move things around, but we are going to look at localized interference. If you want to move it someplace and it's already causing problems with groundwater, we may not be able to approve it if it causes additional problems where you're trying to move it. But if it's already in the ground, we're going to let you, we're going to recognize it there. But also, these numbers show that we've approved more groundwater withdrawal rates than we think there is groundwater available, both in the 54 and in the 55. And so at some point, we're going to have to say, you got to stop. We're going to have to stop. And we're going to have to regulate. We're not experiencing those significant problems yet, but the potential is there to see very significant declines in the groundwater. So we're just trying to be a little proactive here about what we're doing and letting people know that we're not bringing more surface waters into the groundwater, and we're going to look very carefully at this aquifer to see what's happening to it and regulate it very closely.
But is it moving water from 54 east and the 54 west? Isn't that doing that exact thing?
What we looked at is the hydrologic system of where that water comes from. And it actually comes out of the west area. It comes into the east. It kind of splits in the west, and some goes down south and around back. It's all headed toward the lake. And the determination was made about where those wells are in the east area moving to the west. It's not going to cause a lot different impact on the total aquifer than where they are right now. With the exception, if you try to move in close and get close to somebody else's well and start pumping and cause localized interference there, we may not be able to allow that. But the aquifer itself, because of the way the water is moving, will actually sustain that water. So we feel fairly comfortable. We used to have a kind of a dotted line going through there, so you just can't come across there. But we're thinking, why? And as the USGS and the UGS looked at it and did some subsurface investigations and tried to evaluate that, the flow patterns that come through there, that just didn't make sense that there's a line there. And so we thought, well, we'll be very careful as we look at that and see what's happening. But the aquifer is all tied together, and there's a general movement toward the lake.
No, I'm sorry, just one last question. If there's overpumping, if somebody overpumps, somebody's watching, but I notice the plant doesn't have any penalty. If somebody overpumps, is there something in the code that...
And when you say overpump, you mean they're pumping more water than they're...
pumping more water than they're allowed or whatever.
Yeah, there is a whole section of the code under enforcement that if people are pumping outside of their water rights, the state engineer has the authority to go in and curtail that right and actually assess penalties and fines associated with impacts that they've caused to the basin and assess those fines commensurate with the damages that they've caused to the basin. And that program's been in effect for several years now, and it's been fairly effective to keep people in line. So.
Question here?
I don't see anything in here that tells us about whether we can move water into area 55 north, take from south to north. Is that, I know it's against policy, but I don't see it in the plans.
As far as moving from southern Utah Valley, so
yeah.
if there's a water right that would cause a new withdrawal in groundwater in northern Utah Valley, you can't move it in. So if it's a withdrawal of groundwater...
I understand that, but the question is, it doesn't seem to show up in here.
Yeah, so if there's a groundwater right in southern Utah Valley, it would be a new withdrawal in northern Utah Valley.
Yeah, and that's the way it's addressed.
It's
if it's not in the northern Utah Valley right now, it's not coming in. So if you've got water rights in the southern Utah Valley and you wanted to move them in the north, you're several years too late.
And I understood the policy, I just didn't see it explained.
Okay.
And it's intended to be explained in item 2, and then we need to clarify that, but that's where it's intended to be explained. On May 7, item 2.
And it's talking about that new groundwater withdrawal in the 54 and 55 area. So if it's not in that 54 and 55 area as designed in the plan, it's not going to happen. So that's, I think that's where we talked about that. Another question here?
I'm curious, what was the reasoning for the 1 mile buffer versus the 2 or a half mile or a quarter mile? What was the reasoning for the 1 mile?
I think some of the things we looked at, I mean, definitely the two discharge systems come together somewhere in that area. When we first looked at the 2 mile, we tried to go to an area where, because it's really hard to say you're on one side of the line and not the other. And so with the 1 mile, there is a little bit more of a break of some water rights, so that question won't come out. But it was kind of what we felt was maybe more of just the best way to still allow that flexibility within close to that discharge area where those two systems come together.
Yeah, and just to have that line approximately where the river is didn't make sense to us. If you put a well 100 feet on one side of the river and start pumping, you're going to see influences from the aquifer on both sides of the river based on the information that we have. And so with that, there ought to be some flexibility to move across that river, but then how far originally we started out at the 2, but then we thought, based on comments that we got and looking at the data available, Teresa brought up, there is a, more of a break between water rights if we go to the 1 mile, so it just seemed to make sense to allow that flexibility to move back and forth across the river, but not very far. Question here.
What's different about 54 West? That area still remains open to surface to groundwater conversions where nowhere else does.
So some of the differences just with the 54, and if you're in the 54 West, you know, Fairfield Springs is a definite surface source that they continually move to groundwater. And by allowing some of those diversions from the surface rights to move to groundwater, it's not going to create much more of an impact or demand in that particular area. But when you look in the surface sources in 55 area, you've got a whole lot more of the lake, Utah Lake rights, the Jordan River, and that's definitely where we've seen some impact. So again, for the 54 West, just trying to give flexibility to those users that are doing that currently, and there's not really an impact to their system out there in Fairfield by moving those stream rights to the groundwater.
You're saying because most of the flows don't ever make it to Utah Lake from that area,
right?
They end up recharging somewhere anyway.
Yes. Goes to the sinks area. If you're familiar with it?
One more question, if you don't mind. What is the definition of the canyon area? How would you know if you're in a canyon area or not?
So, like Upper Provo area, if you look at the boundary map that's going to be drawn, so that's up in a canyon area. There are some surface rights to the Provo River that probably would not have an effect if they went to groundwater rights in that same canyon valley. And that's what
that
that's going
to be. Hard delineation provided, or is that just kind of a...
Each change application we evaluate. So, you know, I if you're up in those areas, I think, or if you're in another canyon, American Fork, we would look at that and see what kind of impact would be there. I'm not sure if you have a particular canyon in mind, but...
In general, yeah, we don't have lines drawn across, but generally from the mouth of the canyon up, we would look at that.
Are you talking specifically the canyons that have water in them? Water, or
well, if you had a water right up the canyon, say like American Fork Canyon, you wanted to take that surface right and change that to a well, up in the canyon area, there would have to be water there. We'd have to look at that water available, then we'd allow you to change that surface water to go to a groundwater source staying up in the canyon. We wouldn't allow you to come back down into the valley and do something there in the groundwater, but we'd have to stay up in the canyon area. John.
I have some questions on the priority regulation paragraph. It's very well written and makes it clear that if you are regulating to meet safe yield, you know, because of safe yield concerns, that you will only be regulating the groundwater rights within the groundwater area that's designated. It could be the whole Northern Utah Valley groundwater area, or it could be more local, a smaller area.
It could be either, yes.
And so when you're regulating regulating only the groundwater rights, then the priority date you use will be the date that groundwater right first moved into the groundwater area.
That's correct. And Teresa kind of cautioned on that because some people have moved groundwater rights for surface water rights into the groundwater, and then they file the change to move it to a different location, And sometimes your water right will show that third time you've moved it. But what we're going to be regulating on is the first time you move that water right, surface water right, into the groundwater, and that's the priority that's going to be dealt with as far as regulation. Assuming it's not a localized interference, small area thing, because it might be the priority of that third change. If you move the third change, cause you to start causing interference to somebody else, it's going to be the priority of that latest change. But if it's a basin-wide, it's going to be when you first move that right into the groundwater.
And so this priority regulation would apply when groundwater is being regulated under the groundwater management plan to meet safe yield.
That's correct.
Does do you does this plan, I don't think it does, but I want to clarify. Does this plan specifically address conjunctive management and regulation of groundwater rights should there be a surface call on the Utah Lake system?
This does not at this point. This is just management of the groundwater system. Now, there might be something happen in the future where the carp don't have any place to swim in Utah Lake anymore, okay?
Right.
Even though they're going to leave some in there, I think. But if it gets to the point where there just isn't water coming into the lake, I mean, we're in a serious drought. There's problems, so we have to make a determination. There needs to be a whole hydrologic conjunctive management of this system. We're going to have to come back together and talk about that. But I think at that point, we're going to get to a situation where we may be looking at priorities then of the whole underlying right to them that may regulate when you can take your water. But that's a pretty serious situation.
Right. And that would be outside of the groundwater management plan.
Yes.
More of a basin-wide.
It would be a basin-wide regulation. Yes, it would.
Because that would also involve Southern Utah Valley, Goshen Valley. I mean, all of those are tributaries, so it's not.
When we're there, I hope I'm not here.
I hope you're not. and then one more clarification. When the groundwater rights are regulated under the groundwater management plan, then the Before that happens, it says that the plan, this plan itself, will have to be amended. In other words, how you specifically decide which priority dates to begin the cuts and regulation, you're going to be going through the public process again. Is that how I'm understanding it? You're not just going to issue an edict one day and say, everything below, 1910, you're cut off.
Well, and I think this tells us kind of how we're going to do it, but I think when we actually do that, then we're going to come back and say, here's what's happening.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's very good, sir.
Other questions? Okay. No questions, Lauren? You want to know when you're going to get your power back on?
Yeah.
I can't help you there. Even though it was a water cause thing, I'm not responsible for that.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being here. Oh, another question.
Ken, we've got a serious thing here that I think has been overlooked with the water being affected in Area 54 in Cedar Valley and Cedar Court, Fairfield, by Kennecott. Kennecott is 1,000 feet down in the bottom of their pit, and they're draining the static level of that water that has previously rose up. And I've been 80 years old, and 75 years I've seen those springs, and that up the right-hand fork of West Canyon just dry up till we have not even stock water hardly there. And this has happened previous, so what can we do about it now? There's got to be some adjustment made some way.
Well, there's always ways to protect your water right. I mean, even outside of this groundwater management plan, but if you feel like at any time somebody has impaired your rights, you have the right to be able to challenge them and to have them compensate you for the damage that they have caused you or the impairment that they've caused you. And I know the concern. We've talked about this before, but the burden when they would have to come back and actually show that that's actually happened, okay? And then the person who is taking the water away from you would actually have to be enjoined to kind of go after them to say, you've taken my water, and here's the proof that you did it. That's not an easy thing to do. So, how do I address it here? I don't know that I have the evidence or information available to me to make that decision yet, but I know you're concerned. Somebody would have to figure that out. So, and all we're going from is numbers that we're showing from the USGS on how water is moving through the system, what they feel like the recharge is. But I know on that, I mean, it's like a 40-second foot right that gets clear up to 1.5 or 2 second feet sometimes. And I know it's a problem. I don't know where the water's going. We're gonna, somebody's gonna have to figure that out, and if we feel like somebody's taking the water, there may be some liability issues associated with that, but that's gotta be proven.
It's going up there in the daybreak pond, that's where it's going.
I don't have a comment on that. But I understand your concern. Any other questions? Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate your attendance. You should hear from us next week, and we'll be starting our 60-day process to adopt this plan. So thank you.